So in today's episode of The Leader Smith, I am going to be talking to a good friend from a long time ago who is now a missionary in Colombia. In a time where we have such bad news all around, it's sometimes good to hear some good news. Stick around.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, you are listening to The Leader Smith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
So I'm joined by Brian Miller. Brian and I worked at Stonebridge School years ago together. He was teaching Spanish while I was teaching history and government and economics. And Brian left the United States, but not for political protest type reasons. He left the United States to go to Colombia. And well, Brian, welcome to the show. Tell us why you left the U.S., why you went to Colombia, and what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me have this opportunity today. I was 21 years old, and I went to Colombia, and I saw these children living on the streets. There's 4,000 kids in the streets. A beautiful country, lots of great prosperity, but there was 4,000 kids on the streets, and I was really touched by that. And I was in the military, and I was with their National Guard, and I just felt like, well, you know, I had learned some training for the military to help rescue people. I could come and help rescue these kids, and so I was volunteering in a foundation. They would call you very quickly, start calling your brother or uncle. And I just felt like you could really make a difference in someone's life. And so I was finishing my aeronautical engineer degree, and I made a decision to be a full-time missionary in Colombia and try to help rescue these kids off the street. So that's how, in a nutshell, I got the calling to come to Colombia.
And that was how long ago?
That was 24 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So tell us specifically what it is you do. You're talking about rescuing children from the streets. I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah. So when I first got here, I was with a ministry that had a large team, and the team would go out in the streets, and we'd go out every day picking up young kids off the streets. At that time, there was lots of boys on the streets. So we would take them into a halfway home where they stay there from 8 to 4. And we start working with it. They had a lot of fears, and they didn't trust anyone. And then from that, the kids that really wanted to change, we had them come live in a farm. Now, I did that for 7 years, going back and forth during the summer, helping that ministry. And then I came work with them for 10 years. And then I just started a street children's ministry. Street children's ministry is actually for girls that are pregnant living on the streets. And so what we're doing on that is very similar. We're going out in the streets looking for pregnant girls that have no place to stay, and ask them to come live with us.
So now this sounds a little bizarre to an American ear. Like, you're going out on the streets looking for kids to tell them come stay with us, but that's because we're thinking like, hey, you're going to get in trouble with child welfare, protective services. There's no, like, tell us what happens to these kids if you don't do what you're doing.
Yeah, so like for the pregnant girls from the streets, for example, they're actually working in prostitution, waiting for their clients. And so if we don't actually rescue them, they're going to keep on doing that type of trade, as well as get infections, as well as hurting their babies. And actually, right now we have a home, and six of the girls live. Well, I've had eight girls go through this new ministry, the pregnancy girls program, and we have eight girls come to the ministry. And seven of them were actually in line at the abortion clinic to abort their babies. And we rescued them, rescued their babies as well as them from making that terrible decision. So if we're not there to rescue them, for the pregnant girls, if we're not there to rescue them, they'll go ahead and abort their babies. And to go back to the trade, go back to selling their bodies to be able to make the means of every day.
So, now, I remember hearing your pitch. Loud back there, huh? That's good. Yeah. I mean, how many people are at where you are now?
So at our girls' home, we have six girls, and we have two full-time workers working to help the girls.
Okay. And so when I first heard your story, what you were doing, this was like 2000, 2002, three, something in that neighborhood. And you're talking about this, like, it was heartbreaking seeing the presentation of, you know, kids sniffing glue and all kinds of stuff. Now, one, tell us where we can find your presentation or some kind of material to point, your website or something, if anybody wants to follow up.
There's a website called www.tministries.org, such as T Ministries, Transformation Ministries.
Spell that because you have a terrible accent being from West Virginia.
T as in transformation and then ministries, M-I-N-I-S-T.
The letter T, ministries.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
.org. And so that's our website. But it's where you do upgrade it because we've opened up the girls' home. It's a little bit about the girls' home. The website talks about us building the girls' home. Now the girls' home is actually built and we're running it. So that's what I usually use more Facebook, which that is Brian David Miller.
Okay.
To kind of publicize what we're doing. As well, we have another website, a Facebook site called Global Transformation Ministries.
Okay, so let's switch gears. Tell me what you have learned about leadership. I mean, this podcast is all about leadership. What have you learned about leadership in your time there on the streets, working in the administration, as you've tried to grow your programs or switch from focusing on boys to focusing on young ladies? What have you learned about leadership?
Yeah. So on leadership, I really tried to step up my game on listening because you know, as a foreigner, you come in with all these ideas. I know everything. I just got my master's. I know it all. Just do what I tell you to do. And really, the natives know more than us. And so to be able to listen to them and be able to ask them questions, to be able to see what their motivations are, has really changed the way I've been able to work. And as well as this particular new ministry, we want to create a movement, not everything centered around this head figure of the gringo here ministry. And so the idea is, the team is, you know, what should we do? Not what should I do? What should we do? And be able to give people the opportunity to make mistakes. I think that's one thing is we're fearful of doing as leaders. But if you let them make mistakes, they'll learn from their mistakes and they won't do it again. You don't have to be on top of them saying, hey, do this. You know, so that's my biggest thing right now is just trying to listen to them. Even after being here so many years, things change. And like right now, we got a lot of Venezuelan refugees and they're a whole other culture and they still speak Spanish, but their words mean something different. And so you're trying to learn them to be able to relate with them. It's all about relationship. You don't know what makes people tick. You really can't inspire them to move forward. So
I've got to interrupt because you've said like you just machine gunned a bunch of great things, relationship, the different culture. And what I started thinking of when you first started talking of your, you know, this gringo coming in, telling people this was you sounded like helping without hurting. I don't know if you've seen that video series on YouTube. Craig Groeschel's church, the Bible app church, put that together. And it's great because this is useful for leadership, regardless of who you are, whether it's intercultural or whatever. It's just a matter of like, I don't know it all. And if I listen to people that are actually, that I'm trying to help, guess what? You can actually make some headway there if you're willing to listen, but you got to be fairly humble and be willing to learn. That's the first one. The second one, the pulling back and letting other people work and you're inspiring or infusing the team rather than being the sage on the stage or trying to be follow me, right? I mean, that's a very different way of leading, but it's probably more effective. Can you confirm that?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, it has better results. So like I go to the United States for a month or a month and a half, and one of the best comments I heard was from the worship leader. He said, you know, when you leave, we really, I mean, don't take it wrong, but when you leave, we really don't feel like you've left because we keep on moving. We don't feel like this big vacuum in what's going on.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's like, was it Lao Tzu that says when a leader leads best or something like that, the people say we've led ourselves?
Yeah.
I think there was some phrase like that. I can't remember exactly the quote, but that's right. I mean, that's inspiring. I'm very glad that you said that because that's exactly when you know that you're leading. When you leave and it all falls apart, you did wrong.
Right.
you built it on you rather than for sustainability. So that's good. Right. What was the other one? Relationship. Tell me about that.
Well, the relationship, you know, I think if you, you know, when you do a ministry, you don't have money. You know, it's very low on resources. So like if you have money, you can pretty much tell anybody what to do, how their job description is. But they're only going to do it for inspiration and money. But if you do in a relationship, the relationship in the Lord, the relationship with one another, they're not really worried about finances as much as the relationship. And if they know they are cherished, you know, like they really care. Like my biggest thing is, so I have my aeronautical engineering degree, work on airplanes 7 years, very mechanical thinking. And then to go in this relationship ministry and then have to like stop and say, hey, how are you doing? How's your family? Name their kids. How's your kid doing in school? And then, okay, now we got to do some things that didn't work, you know, but build that relationship. That's been a challenge for me, but it's been because of the best results. And to be real to people and really, you know, be joyful with them as well as be sad with them when they're sad, you know. So.
Yeah, tell me about the cross-cultural aspect when you're dealing with the Venezuelans pouring over the border, because, you know, for those that haven't paid attention, Venezuela decided to go full-on socialist and destroyed their country. I mean, and mm-hmm. so they're streaming over the border into Colombia. You can attest to that, yes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. About a thousand.
So how do you deal with Venezuelans as opposed to Colombians?
So the Venezuelans, they... there's kind of like three different types of Venezuelans coming in. They're ones that worked really hard and they had really good jobs, but now they like it takes a whole month of, if you make minimum wage, you can buy one package of eggs with that minimum wage for a whole. And so like these people left their countries trying to find jobs here in Medellin and throughout Colombia. And so they're hard workers. And then there is a very large group was just up on the social system, like waiting for the handouts. But now when they get their handout, they really feeds them for 3 days, and then uh-huh. for the rest of the month, they're just trying to survive on the streets. And so they come to Medellin looking for a handout.
Wait, that's back in Venezuela, that's what happens?
Yeah, that's what happens in Venezuela. So then you come to Medellin, and they have the same mentality. You know,
they're looking for somebody to give them something.
Yeah, because that's what they grew up with for years. And so, and then the Colombians, they were actually very opening, beginning, come on in, we want to help. And all of a sudden, there's you know, I want to say there's 1 million Venezuelan refugees in Colombia.
Wow.
And so now they're like, oh, we got to kind of close the doors a little bit because they're overtaking the streets and peddling. And actually, very interesting, where the street people used to be, Medellin is really, since my 20-some years going back and forth to Colombia, Medellin has got a lot better prosperous-wise. But where the street kids used to be standing on the corner, now is Venezuelans asking for handouts.
Oh, wow. And so that's significant changes then. So how do you deal with Venezuelan? I mean, is there a cultural backlash to it, or are they seen differently, or how does that work?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there people don't like. I mean, the average Colombian looks down upon them and thinking they're lazy. So now it's like a work of the Colombians to love your neighbor and to, you know, love them unconditionally, and then try to connect them to places where they can get jobs and work and excel. And give them opportunities to actually work and learn the joy of working. So we've had a mix of everything. We've had families that have came and really done well, and they've got jobs and are providing for their kids. And we've had other families we're still struggling with to help them learn the joy of working. If that makes any sense to you. I know it sounds weird to somebody that comes from a background all your life, you know.
No, but these people have chores, been, you know? That's right. These people have been conditioned into that for years now with the socialist government. And so, so that's a tricky proposition, I would imagine.
Yeah. We start in Genesis, you know, before the fall of man, Adam and Eve had to take care of the garden. They had to work, you know, before the fall of man. Then after the fall of man, they had to do it with their sweat, you know, but work is given from God. And so, and right now, the coronavirus and unemployment's increased tremendously. So it makes it really hard for the Venezuelans. So with the, for the last 3 months, since March the 20th, we've been, for more or less, a lot of the Venezuelan families, we've been giving food for them for about every 2 weeks we come and give them food for about a week to try to help them out during this time.
And but, I would imagine that's what the handout is well received, but trying to get them to, you know, the old Lincoln quote about give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish and, you know, feed him for life, right? How well is it? Are you able to cross that bridge from, you know, a handout to teaching them how?
Yeah. So when they start coming, so we have a church also. We have a church. So when they start coming to the church, a perfect example. Daniel, he's a wonderful young boy. He's 21 years old, just graduated from college in Venezuela. Come to Medellin, had no job. He come to our church because he saw a bunch of people coming into the door. And someone said, you want to come in with us? So he comes in selling his brownies in the church. I don't even have to sell, you know. And so he come into church selling brownies, just trying to make his ends meet. And then the next Sunday, he come to church and said, hey, Daniel, how much money did you make selling brownies last week? And he goes, oh, I made $3. So I tell you what, I'm going to give you $3, but don't sell brownies here. Come and worship with us. And then I start talking to him. What's your talents? What's your gifts? What do you know how to do? And then we got him connected to a place to get a job. Now, we had a food basket. That first Sunday he came, he got free food out of the basket to take home for his house. Once he got a job, he came back to the church, and he had this big smile on his face. I remember getting, he opened his backpack, and he pulls out this big bag of rice, and he says, I put that in the basket for the people. And so wow. That's been kind of neat to see that change. You know, I'm receiving, now I'm making my own, and now I'm helping others. So.
Yeah, and he's a net contributor now that he has been able to do that. And that's, you know, we squander human capital sometimes and think, well, we just need to give handouts. Well, yeah, you do in a critical time, but if you keep people on that, now you right. have disempowered them long term, and you need to get them over that critical hump into being productive. And that's how the society functions, right? So that's great.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges, like working with girls in prostitution. So the girls in prostitution, they will tell our social worker or a psychologist, when they first come, they think their lifestyles you've had is a normal lifestyle, because that's what their grandmother did, that's what their mother did, and that's what they did. And so to try to teach them that's wrong, they're like, well, look, I work 3 o'clock in the evening, 3 o'clock in the morning, I make more money than you in a month. I mean, why do you say my job's bad? We'll like, say to them, this is the reason why it's bad, and help them, encourage them in another lifestyle, which has always been challenging. So now we're going to teach you how to sew. We have industrial sew machines to teach them how to sew. We're going to teach them how to cut hair, teach them how to do nails so they can get a job in the real world.
Yeah. Here you want to retool instead of encourage more efficiency. Yeah. So tell me about some successes that you've seen beyond Daniel and these girls. I mean, what really stands out as you reflect back over time?
Yeah, over time, you know, in the last 5 years, we started this new church plant, reaching out to middle upper class people in Medellin, and just to see, like, we didn't have a church, and now the church is all together. But this culture is a culture, is very, you know, it's the poor stays with the poor, the wealthy stays with the poor, mm-hmm. the wealthy stays with the wealthy. There's no mixture, and so like our church itself is 100 people from all the different classes, from all the different backgrounds. Just show the love of Christ, kind of like a Times Square kind of church. So, so that's been pretty exciting just to see that. But to see within 5 years now we have a pastor that is actually, he could run the church if I left. And when I do leave, he does run the church, to see people thinking in others. So before it's like, you want to go to the streets and reach out to the street people, like, oh no, I'm scared. You know, like, well, let's go. Now they're like, Brian, we're going to go. When are you going to go? We're going to go by. Just to see people take initiative and to love on people.
Yeah, that's
good. See people use their, and the people of all ages, like we got senior citizens that know how to sew. And so they show up at the girls' home, teach them how to sew. We have people that own cake, like a cake parlor. He makes desserts, and he'll show up out of the blue and have a picture of all the girls on top of the cake. Here, I made you a cake for the girls. And to see them reaching out, helping the community, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. Hey, so how about you come back tomorrow? We'll continue this conversation. Right now, I'm about as far as my episodes go. I try to do this in short increments. But I'm going to leave my listeners with the quotation for contemplation for today, and we'll talk more with Brian tomorrow. So this is from Mother Teresa. If you're humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. And I think that's a great quote, because sometimes you would look at, the scripture says, don't despise the days of small beginnings. And I'm sure you've seen those mm-hmm. small beginnings. But in spite of that, being faithful, you see the snowball beginning to grow over time as it's rolling down this hill. It's just getting bigger and bigger. And I'm sure you're seeing some of those results now. We want to talk a little bit more about those results tomorrow, if you're willing to be to come back. And I also want to talk about specifically how you're funding this venture. I saw this thing on Facebook where you're talking about selling coffee to fund it. And that's what initially triggered this discussion. So I want to do that tomorrow. We just ran out of time. So let's talk tomorrow. Are you willing to do that?
That'd be great. I'll see you tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you very much.